All right, so for those of you who don't know me, my name is Jesse Barnes. I work at the Intel Open Technology Center with a few of the other people that are here. With a focus on the Intel graphics stack, but of course, you know, we don't limit ourselves to just the Intel drivers. We work on the stack. I think it was a year and a half ago or so that your IQ bits landed just after Edinburgh. So it's actually not been that long that we've had DRI-2, and it's been pretty successful, but there were a few things that we knew about when it was committed that didn't support. For instance, we didn't have a good answer for page flipping, at least one that didn't get committed at that time. And we didn't have support for some of the pretty standard GLX extensions that people typically use in applications. So we went back and forth and came up with a couple of extensions to the protocol and driver APIs within the server and code and on the Mesa drivers, X drivers, and X core to support it all. And this wouldn't have happened without Christian and Mario. They were both heavily involved in the definition of these and in their implementation. So thank you to them for that.
So the things that we added here are everything starting with the
new swap buffers request all the way through the swap interval, and we added two new events as well. So I'll just go over each one of those in turn, talk about what they're for, and then we'll get into the X server internals, the 2D driver implementation, the Mesa driver implementation, if people have questions about that. And we can also talk about the usage models for them. I know Mario's got some more details on that later, which should be really interesting, how people are using these things. So first off, the swap buffers extension. This is something we knew we wanted to do even as DRI-2 was committed. But we didn't have a good idea of how to do it yet. And this, we went back and forth, I think, with about three different implementations before we settled on what we have today. So the swap buffers implementation, this is a request from that client, from a direct rendering client to the display server, saying, I've got a back buffer, new back buffer ready, swap it with a front buffer, standard GL stuff. The first version of this was, first version I implemented of this would swap the buffers and then the display server would immediately return with a reply, giving you your swap, a new set of buffers for you to render into. And for various reasons, we decided that wasn't a good idea. Christian was felt pretty strongly that rather than making it a round trip, it ought to just be a one request. That we just tell the server, hey, swap the buffers, and then at some point later we'd get new buffers. And that turned out to be a really good fit for the invalidate event that was added later. So that's where we ended up with the swap buffers implementation. So now it's just a one-way request. Let's see if I've got the... Oh, it's down below, isn't it? So the copy region was what we used to use. So here's the swap buffers. This is what the request looks like on the client side to the server. So obviously we specify the drawable we're interested in, and we have all sorts of fun figuring out, oh, is that a GLX drawable or an X drawable? But I think we've figured most of that out now. Then we have three different fields split up into 32-bit chunks. And these fields are to support the GLX OML sync extension. And that allows you to queue up swaps for a specific frame in the future. So if you know what your frame count is, your current frame count is, you know what your what kind of animations you want to display, what kind of frame rate you want to display. You can use this new swap buffers request to queue up, 10 swaps up in the future. Although the implementation of that is a bit sketchy still, but this allows you to do that. And you can specify the target media stamp counter is what it's called. That's your frame count. Or you can specify a device remainder equation just like you can with the SGI sync control extension. So that lets you specify a frame count divisor and remainder that, if satisfied, will complete the swap. So it's a pretty powerful swap request, but it pushes a lot of the logic of handling all of this into the display server. But that's the only way we can do it with DRI-2, because only DRI-2 knows where your buffers are displayed, if they're displayed at all, and how to handle the frame count for a given drawable.
So then the next request we have is the getMSC, and this is a really basic request that just lets you get the current
frames, basically, correct frame count. So So this is a more or less a direct translation of the DRMI output to get the current frame count. The server, it's up to the server to figure out which pipe to do the query on. If you have a multiple CRTC GPU, the server has to figure out for that drawable that the request came in on, which pipe to do the query against. So, or if the drawable is not visible at all, the driver has to do something intelligent and return back a fake value, invalid, something else. And you'll see the swap buffer's reply. There actually is a reply in here, but that comes back with the swap count that the swap will be swapped at. That's another OML requirement. So when you queue a swap with sync OML, you have to know which swap it's going to be swapped in at. But that's a very quick reply. It's not we're not sending back buffers or anything and idling the client. See the next request. So getMSC, like I said, is very simple. And there's two new wait protocol requests. So waitMSC is if you're familiar with the GLX, with the SJAD video sync extension, this is a pretty direct translation of that, but it also has support for some of the OML stuff. So you pass in what your wait parameters are. I want to wait for this frame or this divided remainder, and it's exactly the same format as the swap. So you can wait on, you know, I want to wait until frame 10 comes, waking up when that happens, or I want to wait until this divided remainder is satisfied on the frame count. And when it returns, you'll get back the reply. So when your client is woken up, you'll get a waitMSC reply telling you the timestamp of that frame that you're waiting for. And the waitSPC is the same way, except this allows you to wait for a specific swap count. So say you've queued up, you know, 10 frames in the future, and now you want to wait for, say, frame 5 of that queue to come through before you start doing anything again. You can wait for a specific swap count. And that allows you to do some nice things if you're doing advanced video processing or kind of fancy animations. And then finally, to support all of this, there's the swap interval request. So this lets you set your swap interval for just standard swap buffer calls. A lot of applications use this to throttle their animations to a given frame rate. Usually some divisor of the refresh rate, 60 or 30 or 50 or whatever. So this lets you do that. Libraries like Flutter use this to throttle their drawing so that they don't have to do a bunch of timekeeping locally. And arguably this is how the server is supposed to work. You can set it to zero. There's a MESA extension to allow you to set it to zero, which lets you not throttle it at all. You just draw frames as fast as you can. But otherwise, it'll limit you basically to the frame rate. That's the server default behavior. And then we added two new events. So DRI2 events come from the server back to the client at various times. So we've got two of them right now. One of them will be sent to the client when a previously queued buffer swap completes. And it comes with a full set of reply data, just like you get from the waitMSC return, including the timestamp, the frame count, and the swap count for when the swap completed. And then there's the invalidate, which I'll let Christian talk about a little bit. But before we get to that, I wanted to go into the server side a little bit.
We rewrite the DRI2 swap complete event into a GLX event when we receive it. So to the application, it looks like it's actually a GLX event it receives. And you subscribe to the event using GLX API as well.
Right, same with the swap complete event. So that's also a GLX extension. And we'll get into the GLX side of it a little bit. But I wanted to show you what I tried to document these as well as I could. So there's a whole, in DRI2.h, this is just the definition of the driver's implementation of DRI2 on the server side. So I added, for all the new functions to support these new protocol requests, I added some documentation about how they ought to work. So the server has several new callbacks into the driver to support these new protocol requests. The first one is the schedule swap, so that when the server receives a swap buffers request of any kind, it'll call into the driver and say, hey, schedule a swap for this frame count. And the driver is responsible for queuing an event with the kernel or doing whatever it's going to do. It could even be just a timer-based system for the swap sometime in the future, and then it's responsible for completing the swap. And there's a separate procedure for that. There's the new get MSC, which is the real basic when the server needs to find the frame count, whether from a protocol request or for an internal user, we'll make a call to this, which is get the frame count for a given drawable. And then you're supposed to return the timestamp, ideally an accurate one, of the corresponding frame for that, for the corresponding MSC. So the timestamp should be very accurate for that particular media stamp counter or frame count. For the new wait requests, there's this schedule wait MSC. This will ask the driver to queue up a wait on a given frame count, just like the swap request, except you're waiting on a specific frame. And then there's a couple of new callbacks or new core functions that the drivers can use when various events happen. So if the driver's queued up a wait MSC, for example, and the client is going to be going to sleep for 10 frames or something, you can use a DRI2 block client call for that. So you've made the request in the kernel saying, hey, give me a notification when you get to frame N. Then you put the client to sleep. Then when that frame event comes in, then you can wake the client back up. And you do that with the wait MSC complete call. Likewise with swap complete. So you may put the client to sleep for a swap. You may not, depends on your implementation. Ideally, you want to allow clients to queue up swaps without putting them to sleep, because clients may have something they want to do. So hopefully you're just calling this as swaps complete, but not blocking the client in between. So you can see the definition for this allows you to do some nice things. So when a swap request comes in, it's up to the driver to figure out what to do. So you've got the client pointer, obviously the drawable for the swap, and you've got the DRI2 buffers associated with the swap. Those could be anywhere. And then you've also got the requested main target or device remainder if present, a swap event pointer, which is what will be called when the swap completes, and that's how we do things like the swap event protocol request or protocol event, and then some data that it gets passed to that function. So the nice thing about this is it lets you, when the driver gets the request, it can actually schedule it and say, oh, these buffers happen to be screen sized, let's just queue up a flip. So the driver has a lot of leeway here in doing whatever it wants. It can queue up a blip, it can blip immediately in return. There's nothing that says you have to do a flip or you have to do an exchange. You can do any of these things. So that's a kind of a nice callback in that way. On the downside, it means the drivers have some duplicated logic potentially for figuring out what to do, but there's some helpers for that. So we've got a can exchange helper that you can call into the server and ask, hey, are these two drawables similar enough that we can actually just exchange the pointers instead of blitting between them, which can save a lot of memory bandwidth, especially on low-end platforms, mobile platforms. So the Intel implementation, if we look at that. So here's the Intel implementation of the schedule swap hook. So obviously it has all the same parameters here. And this uses the DRM vblank event infrastructure that Christian added. So you can open up the DRM file descriptor in dev and request that an event be given to you, and then you just pull the file descriptor. So that's added to the server's file descriptor list. And when there's activity on that, we read out a DRM vblank event, which includes the timestamp information, the frame count, And so that's how we get notification of a completed swap event. So that makes this very easy, but there's nothing that says you have to do it that way. If you have a different driver architecture, you can do it in a different way. The main thing is you want to make sure that the server and clients can still run as much as possible without, you don't want to block everybody just because someone queued a swap, if you can avoid it. In our case, we block the client if it's trying to do other GL stuff after it's submitted the swap. So we'll queue up the swap, we'll let the client do other stuff, but if it does other GL commands, sends in new GLX commands against those drawables, we will block it until the swap completes. There's nothing to say that we have to do that. We could do end buffering, for example, and allocate new buffers for the client so that they could just continue on rendering. But at this point, we haven't done that.
Do you have any ideas how successful that is in terms of how many clients just almost immediately block or how many actually get useful work done before they block?
No, I haven't done instrumentation on the clients. This behavior was requested by the Flutter team, though. So they had jumped through all sorts of hoops to avoid blocking in the first place. But with this implementation, they don't. And they wait until they receive a swap event complete before they start doing other drawing. So we do have some libraries, at least, that are being smart about this. So they'll queue up the swap and they'll wait for the swap complete event to arrive before they start doing other stuff. Even, to avoid blocking.
Even like the Quake kinds of game engines will submit a swap, go out and start calculating the next scene, and eventually start to
come. I'm just wondering how much competition is actually managing to do, or if they end up, clearing the back buffer before they go out and start to do these stuff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a variety of GL applications. A lot of them smart, a lot of them dumb. But no, I haven't done any surveying of it.
The kind of stuff that I do, the tools for psychologists, it's very useful. But you often have to synchronize stuff to visual onset.
Yeah.
You say, I want to start playback of the sound 5 milliseconds after the buffer swap, and I want to send some TTL trigger signals to some research equipment, and I want to do 5 other things. And it just makes the programming logic much more simple if you can do this single thread.
Right.
It's about basically the users are challenged already by writing single-threaded scripts and
instead of blocking. And so the GLX specification actually, and GL implied that swap was not blocking in several places. And our implementation happened to be blocking for a long, long time. So the fact that this was made non-blocking actually uncovered some bugs. Early on when I made this non-blocking, I found that some clients like GLX Gears would just queue up thousands of frames and then kill the server because I wasn't handling that case properly. So we have to block at some point, otherwise we'll just run out of resources, right? But we can allow queuing up of several frames with some server implementation fixes. We could go to end buffering. So that, like I said, the way that this works, we request from the kernel a blank event relative to whatever frame count was passed in. When that event arrives, we get called into our frame event handler. And so depending on what the swap schedule function is decided, we'll either come back with a flip completion. Flip is actually an interesting case, mostly a swap completion, or if we queued a wait MSC, we'll come back and we'll do a wait MSC completion. The way that our flip implementation works is we'll schedule a swap first for one frame before it's supposed to happen. We'll come into the frame event handler and say, oh, this is a flippable request, let's now queue the flip. Then we'll request the kernel to flip the pages or flip the buffers for the next frame.
What if you get a flip request?
For the same frame.
Yeah.
We'll move it forward by one frame.
Even though you have enough time to do the flip?
Actually, I think we'll get the V-blank event immediately and then we'll try and queue the flip. So there's potential we'll miss the frame, but we may not. So, I mean, there's lots of potential for mistiming things so that you end up missing a potential flip and flipping one frame later, depending on how things are timed.
Say I get the request to you 5 milliseconds before the end of the frame.
So 5 milliseconds before landing frame, that's should be plenty of time. So we'll request the vBlank event for the current frame, the one that's currently displaying, that's almost finished displaying, and try and say, oh, we're already past that point. Here's an event. Then we'll receive that event and queue the flip immediately for the next vBlank, which hopefully within 5 milliseconds we can do that. That's an eternity. So. But given the vagaries of kernel scheduling between the three different entities involved or two different entities.
So you have to get an event all the way back to the application?
No, not to the application, just to the server. So this will just be within the server. So the client will have just submitted the swap buffers. It won't care beyond that.
So when you speak to the client when it starts doing more GL, do you sleep it in the sense of ignore client, or do you just queue up the rest of the GL and let it flush through it?
It's actually ignore client, so you'll see if you can actually pull that up.
Oh, that's
you've
fine.
Had some fun bugs in this area, so
it is a hybrid.
I was hoping someone would ask that.
That's fine, though, because that's just going to queue up in the socket.
You can ask for a reply,
so here's one of the weight swap routines. So it depends actually on how things come in. We've got two places where we'll potentially block. One of them is in the GLX path. So if the client does some GLX calls where we do a make current, we'll block the client at that point. Or if the client does additional DOI2 protocol requests, maybe it's using GL or something, we'll check and see, are we past our swap limit? And we'll block the client at that point using this code, which just uses, we reset the sequence and block the client, and eventually when the swap complete call comes in from the 2D driver, we'll wait it back up and you start.
My question was about how much of the next round GL commands will queue up somewhere and let the client kind of run ahead with. Here's what the scene's going to look like.
Yeah, we could be smarter about that.
A lot of it, it's not going to matter too much though, because most of the GL calls don't need a request, get them to reply. So as long as you're just doing straight GL, for the most part, that's just going to pile up in the socket.
Right. But yeah, we could probably be smarter about that.
But we do have two different frames at those, right? We just get to the frame with the flip. Mm-hmm. Like for a few frames out in the future, we'll block the client in the swap. So we don't get to decide until.
So that swap is queued.
Yeah, is that right?
Be right. Yeah, because we have in the actual DRI2 protocol handling code.
So we block the client and send the request the frame before we actually swap. And then once we queue to swap, we let the client go. Mm-hmm. But then if the client tries to render it, the front buffer is still being scanned out, because when you swap the buffers, the new back buffer is the render buffer that's currently scanned out, and you can't start rendering to that until the swap has happened. So if the client goes ahead and tries to touch that, once they go, we're running in the kernel. The gem submit IOPTO will block until that buffer swap happens, and we actually swap the scanner buffer. And then we the gem time run again, and then you can. So that's in part because we can't block the time to send the frames ahead in the kernel, but also because there's more latency when we actually do wake up the time to render the next frame.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot about the kernel side implementation. We mark the buffers busy in the kernel, so any batches later that touch those will be blocked.
Question from IRC, Dave early asks, what about triple buffering?
Yeah, there's all the code is there for that, and I actually turned it on and had it work in simple cases. Mario found some other issues, and we'll talk about those this week.
There I saw code, this will get bad if somebody has triple buffering, but then I saw it's half-coded to double buffering.
Right. Yeah, so all of that.
But you need to add a bit, like for example, what is the weight swap command? You would need some kind of lists so we can queue up which clients are waiting. Instead of a single slot that just stores one client that blocks.
Yeah, but it should be
difficult, but yeah.
It's a very small amount of code that we have to add to make the buffer work. And most of the stuff has checks for how many buffers we have outstanding. So you had a question over here?
Yeah. Why don't you want to get Deblink event for Everbrain? Is it expensive?
Yes. Yeah. So there are several reasons we don't want Deblink events in Everbrain. The main one is power. Waking up the CPU every refresh event is pretty expensive power-wise, because then we can't leave them in a deep sleep state. So the kernel manages all of that for us, though. So if the kernel sees that a client has requested a Deblink event, it will leave the events enabled. But after the last client or last event that's been requested completes, the kernel will time out after 5 seconds and shut off events. So that works out pretty well, and the server side doesn't really care. Like, the server could be receiving events the whole time or not. The implementation doesn't really care, but it does. It is up to the DBX to make the request to the kernel to indicate that it wants to be like that. So yeah, the rest of it is just handled by the kernel. So you could have an implementation that does it, you know, unconditionally. That's not going to be a problem.
And if you have a case that's rendering all the time, it's rendering a frame every Big Bang frame. You will get the events every frame. You're going to get that feedback. But if you stop rendering, the event stops coming. So it seems like it.
Yeah, it was for the border case you told with the 5 millisecond frame time frame, just to ask for the Weblink event and then be able to render the next frame with the swap event you wanted. Well, never mind. Okay.
Yeah, but they'll keep coming if you keep rendering. And but I guess you're saying that there's a corner case when you want to stop rendering.
Well. That's okay.
There were several times when working on this implementation that I wish we just got events every refresh, but I think we've worked it out so that it doesn't require that anymore. So any other questions about that?
How small event for render completion?
No. For render completion?
That's actually something that could be critical and could be used in many cases, that you submit rendering and it's basically asynchronous. Geofinish work. So you say, instead of talking in geofinish, you say give an event when geofinish.
So is this the request for when rendering is done or when the swap is done?
Rendering.
Yeah, so that's sync, arb sync.
I was going to say, there's sync events, we have that.
So that for sync events.
Wait on the sync.
For sync events, you can basically get that, right? You request create a sync object, put it in, and then say, oh, is the sync object done yet? But there are some nicer things we could do there. We could make a new proto request or event, GLX event or a DRI2 event, to notify the client so that it doesn't have to pull the sync status. I think the pull, what is the API for checking your sync completion?
You can either pull or you can block. I mean, either way, you can wait for it to get done, where you can ask, are we there yet?
Yeah, but there's no asynchronous. You have to keep calling, or you have to block.
It would be nice, I mean, it would be a nice addition for most of the callback-based programming methods that the GUIs use, to have an asynchronous event that comes into the client that gets turned into a callback. And then you could call the pull function at that time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what we've done with the swap completion, for example, with the GLX.
So why, I mean...
It's just nicer than having...
I think there's other ways we could do it, to do essentially the same thing, but without adding more proto. But it's not, you also need the protocol if you ever want to synchronize rendering between GL and other X going into S. If you're insane enough to be doing, for example, draw GLC and then do some render text over top of it, then there's no way for you to synchronize that except by having an extended event in GX protocol.
Okay.
For stuff like this, it's just kind of a natural addition. But, I mean, it's obvious why it wasn't done for GL, because it's a generic, right? ArpSync is a GL extension, not a GLX or window binding extension, right?
Right, although, I mean, you convinced me that there's some use to get the asynchronous notification of by the way, you're there.
Yeah, but I think that has to be a window system or a window system binding event.
Not necessarily.
I don't know if...
There's no way to go back into the main loop and open GL. This is what you want to do. You want to queue a callback and then go back into the main loop. And GL doesn't have a concept of main loop. So something that has to be integrated at the GLX level, because we can hook it into the GLX event and then you can use it X event main loop.
Didn't NVIDIA talk about all these events?
Yes, they did. And in fact, if you look at the sync
extension for the same tenses extension that James Jones proposed about weeks ago. That's what this is about.
But yeah, I mean, if we had a core GL way of doing cloud descriptor stuff or something, we could potentially do it. But otherwise, it seems like it makes sense as a Windows system specific event. But I don't really care as long as we can get it.
What I actually meant was to X-Driver to do a click. It needs to know that the render has to click for the previous frame.
Oh, right. Well,
we
currently just leave that up to the kernel. So the 2D driver will say, okay, you've got a clip, cue it, and the kernel will make sure that object is flushed to the appropriate internal domain before it can be clipped to. So it'll make sure that the buffer's idle, in other words. But that's a kernel implementation detail in our case.
We would have the machinery inside the kernel to get a score that when the rendering is done, and that's when we schedule the flip. But we don't expose that to user space. So
aside from the
I mean, our current driver has such a big input that it goes, okay, nature, how SGH works.
So, I mean, your DVX driver may be responsible for that instead. But that should be doable within your DVX driver. So if you queue a flip just before you flip, you make sure that you idle the buffer, or you've created a sync object and made sure it's passed before you move.
We basically have that, but we have expanded your protocol, so we have two events there. One for flip and one for render position.
Do you have to do it as a protocol as a new event, or can you just hide that in the driver as a private event for your driver, for your kernel interface? I mean, I'd hate to add protocol that was only one usable for one driver if you could do it another way.
I think there were some issues with that.
Well, you could.
We need to plug in that case.
You could bring it to the mailing list and we could go over it.
Yes,
I might think that would be useful. If it does turn out to be generically useful, you know, if some other driver wants a similar thing, we can add that. But,
that's one thing that I wanted to propose is if you could extend the page with my own control to tell it basically. We should know which was the last buffer that was submitted before the pop-up request, what was the last time. So there would be basically a way to shortcut the flip request. At the moment, in the Intel driver, right, you just queue up a command to the GPU to flip the page.
Right.
In the command stream, that basically a flush command stream is rendering command.
Yeah.
And it's something like a flush all caches or something, and then swap at next retrace, MI flip or something.
Right.
Now, if you want to have very precise deadlines, right? It can happen with the current implementation. You reach the deadline, okay? Then the DX basically calls the page name IO control, and then this page flip command gets queued in the command stream. If there are other rendering clients that submit the command into the command stream, it can happen that you miss basically calls. So if you have client one, right, and it is swap ready, and you have a flip command for this client one, and it could swap. But there's a client two who submitted the rendering command, so you can basically into a traffic jam.
Yeah,
where client one is swap ready, but this flip command is basically huge behind
right.
Lots of rendering commands for a totally different client.
Yeah.
So you can do something like if the kernel would know basically what was the last fence that is necessary to make this client swap ready, you could do something like, okay, at the time when the page flip control is called, I check if this client is ready, if this client has this rendering completed, and if so, I basically program the flip via MMIO writes, basically out of band.
Yeah, that's something
we had that in JSON at some point.
And I think we may actually go back to it. Now that we've fixed all the issues that we found with the complicated MI buffer info command and missing interrupts, and it's a very fragile scheme. I think
I think going back to that MIO scheme just in the general case makes sense. I was talking with some of the hardware guys and actually the Windows team about races between the MIO programming. So one of the reasons why we switched to going to the ring-based flip was because we were worried that if we did an MIO writing of the double buffer display base for Aaron, we wouldn't know which B-blank that corresponded to, like if the flip would happen immediately or if it would happen on the next B-blank. But we've been told that it always happens on the next one. So that means we can always request a B-blank event at that time, unpin the buffers when the next B-blank comes in. And I don't think that's any worse than we have today, right? Today, you could queue it and it might not happen for two frames because some other GPU hog is ahead of you, right? So I think switching to the MIO scheme might make sense. And there may be some other locking issues we have to deal with in terms of programming the MIO and requesting the B-blank event atomically. But
And another reason we went to PlugVM, the person with the in buffer, basically was that you basically get an escape of asynchronous callback to get this to work. Because you say, program back when, at this earlier time, current, but give me a callback once this range is released. Then you program that, and then that sets up the page flip, and then you need a callback that page flip has been processed, and then you can call back when
it actually completes.
Yeah. So
right now we have a three-step process.
A big callback chain, we have to set up a callback in these stages, different lock. It's just a mess. Using the inline line command to move the page was a lot simpler, but it does turn out that that's not always working that well on our hardware.
You know, once we use both states, we could have something.
Yeah.
To control it. So just if you store somewhere, basically that this specific fence has been reached, right?
Yeah. I think if we added generic infrastructure to support the rendering finished callback, basically the asynchronous fences that I was asking about, we could use that same infrastructure to implement what we were suggesting, because then we would just use that internally to program the flip when that happens, and maybe also never again at that point, and then from there on it's the same.
Yeah, that was another issue with the earlier implementation, because my first implementation was just using MIO, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe I switched to that in the second one. Anyway, it was years ago now. One of the issues with that was before we write the new display base break, we have to make sure the buffer's idle. So making sure the buffer's idle in that ioctl can be just really time consuming. You know, we don't want to lock the client for 20 milliseconds while all the rendering completes.
Another complication is that we don't want to blow out of PMs on one time wait for the buffer to idle.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to be holding the mutex while we wait for that. Yeah. We don't want to block the server if the server's submitting it, right? So,
yeah, so you should be waiting on that frame to come idle, and you don't want to load the big gem block, which will prevent anybody else from submitting rendering at the time. So
we'll still need at least a two-step scheme.
Yeah.
Where we don't write the MIO rates until we idle the buffer.
Yeah.
We'll do that out of line with all the little locks.
Well, it's not that hard to check if it's idle. If you just check the sequence number.
Right.
If it's already passed, then you just swap them now. Otherwise, right. You want something on the right.
Yeah, exactly.
But you often end up having to wait for the sequence.
If you check the sequence number, if it has passed, then you can do it now, otherwise give it one ring.
Yeah, in the common case, it shouldn't be an issue, but we still have the complexity in the other case.
Then what I saw, basically you have a fast pass that you can optimize if you want, right? If the client is swap ready, it would buy a MMI, right?
Sure.
If it's not ready, you just use it back if you know, because then it loses the deadline anyway, then it's much easier to just...
So I know Mario's going to be covering this a little more, but I figured it would be useful to...
I know you more, right? Because it's got this later, but...
No, I love this. And maybe it would have been better to start with this, but this was, like I said, one of the motivations behind adding these protocol requests. There's a whole bunch of GLX extensions that we couldn't really support in DRI-2 without extending DRI-2. And we had a lot of these implemented in DRI-1, and they were working, I think, just about the time we switched over to DRI-2. We only just got them working right when DRI-2 switched over. But we had the OML set. I think Ian coded up the OML extensions. But we didn't actually have it wired into any of the drivers. So we got those as well. And these the swap group and swap barrier are not implemented, so we ignore those. But there is some infrastructure in there for handling that. So the first stop, there's the swap control. That's just the swap interval control. So that makes it possible to do this with the new protocol request. We've got a swap buffers request, and we've got the swap interval request, so we can throttle the client to a certain number of frames per second. The video sync is related, lets you query the frame count, wait for a specific frame count or condition to be satisfied before continuing with your rendering. That allows you to also throttle your client to a certain frame rate. OML sync control combines those two, and some timestamping, which is really nice, especially if you're doing really fine-grained animations. But of course, you need fine-grained timestamps, otherwise it doesn't really work that well. Same with the OML swap. Well, actually, OML swap method is part of your FB config. It's a bit that says what happens when the buffer swap happens, and we can't actually support that in a reasonable way because it could change at runtime. So we need a better way of handling that. I think we just need to find a new extension. Because if your application goes to full screen, we can actually exchange and do page flipping. If you go to window, we may do exchange, we may do flip, depending on what's going on. So having a new extension for describing that. And it would probably have to be a runtime thing where you query, hey, what's my current method or what happened last time.
Yeah.
The swap event down here at the bottom does tell you what happened. So, you know, we've got that, and that may be sufficient for applications. I don't know if people have other needs. And swap control, I was thinking a new swap control extension might be nice so that we could control the buffering behavior. If an application at runtime wants to select triple buffering, I think all of the current drivers, you have to go set a driver configuration option on a per application basis. You say triple buffering on this application, double buffering on this one, sync to be blank on this one, don't sync to be blank on that one. But it'd be nice if applications could control that with an API. We haven't defined that yet, though. And then the swap stuff might be fun to do on multi-head machines, but we haven't implemented that yet. If someone really needs that, they can implement it. Shouldn't be that bad. It really shouldn't be that bad with what we've got in the server today. It could be messy if you've got multiple GPUs. So like I said, I was going to let Christian get into the invalidate event. So that was a really good addition that saves a huge amount of overhead in a lot of cases. There's good invalidate buffers.
Right, yeah. So this is a pretty simple event. It was work that was done by Francisco Gutierrez. He started it and I picked it up and made it. And so it's basically a big change in how DRI2 works, because originally with DRI2 there would be this hack or trick where we would, whenever the application goes out to set the GL viewport, we use as a trigger to go and ask the extra view buffer, because typically what happens is that application gets a configure away when the window resizes and then goes and sets the new viewport, and we would use that sequence to indicate that we should go and get new buffers. But the problem is that a lot of applications get up to setting different viewports during the scene. For example, games that render a little overlay map in the corner will set a viewport for that corner and go render it. So a lot of games will set several viewports during one frame, and these are viewport calls, which turns ends up being a server round trip. So and the other thing is that it's actually also not correct. Like, it's not a clip ranking, which is what the assumption I had, is that if you set a viewport, then you can draw outside the viewport. But that's not the case. It's only useful for initializing the matrix, as well as setting how to map the corners between the window. But you can still draw outside that viewport. Mostly, applications will set the viewport to the entire window. And then if the window size changes, then I assume they wouldn't be drawing out to the viewport, so they wouldn't need bigger buffers until they actually call to your viewport. But it is actually completely illegal to draw outside the viewport, and that should show up, and GL clear should see outside the viewport. So there were always issues with this GL viewport hack, from not being correct to introducing once a round trip for applications that would call the viewport several times during the frame. So what Francisco did instead was he proposed an event that the server can send out to basically tap the client on the shoulder to say view buffers are no longer valid. And it's implemented in a way so that when the server resizes a window, it'll send out a configure event, but the invalidate event always goes out before the corresponding configure event. So that what happens is that eventually the application will get the configure event, and at that point you've already received and processed the invalidate event. So when you get the configure event and try to redraw corresponding to that configure event, the driver will already have the new buffers. So the ordering is right here. We get the invalidate to the server before the application tries to render anything, depending on that configure event. And what happens on the client side is that we get the invalidate event in as a DRI2 event, and we look up the drawable that this event is targeted at. We tell the driver this drawable no longer has valid buffers. And this is a very simple calling to the driver. We just set a bit in that drawable to say it's invalid. And the next time the drawer goes out and the driver goes out and tries to draw to this drawer, it'll look at the bit and see, hey, this is not a valid drawer anymore. And then it adds the server for the new buffers, get the new buffers, and then proceed with drawing whatever the client is asking it to draw. So it actually ends up being a pretty efficient way of keeping the buffers in sync. During steady state rendering, if nothing's getting resized, we don't do any round trips to the server. When something gets re-rendered, we get the right sequence of events that lets us invalidate before the client tries to render and then get the buffers when we need them. So it's how it should have been done, basically. And it's in place now. It works for, I think, it works for most of the drivers now. I think, did you pay for Radeon Europe? The invalidate support?
We don't have
echo
stuff, yeah.
No, well, this is independent from the swapping. This is to avoid the viewport hack.
We need to check that, but at one point, we really look at it because we don't want to have the periphery. And I think we decided less near that forever.
Okay.
We will have Europe too.
Right.
But we need to do a little check, but definitely at one point, we'll look at it.
Right. I mean, it's the way it should work, and it makes the driver simpler because the other thing is that if we have in the GL, we have backwards compatibility code, so that even if we're working with an older server, then a newer GL working with a new DRI driver will call into the DRI driver whenever we do the swap buffers and on initial buffer when you find the buffer context. So the driver will get those invalid callbacks at certain points in time. And we may invalidate a little too often in this case, but it's no worse than what we did with the viewport hack. So for the DRI driver, you can actually assume that invalid is always going to be called if you expose it. So that there's it's easy to switch. But that just is like if you have a new driver working with an old GL, that won't call your invalid function. So then there's like a lot too many combinations of versions of server, the GL and the DRI driver, and in most of these cases it will work, but there are still cases where the backwards compatibility code won't kick in because you have the wrong version. So it's not safe to drop the viewport hack yet, but I think in a few revisions, after a few releases, we can probably drop the viewport hack. We're going to leave it in the protocol, of course, but on the GL, DRI driver side of things, we can at some point start to assume that GL viewport hack no longer is required, and we only get they mandate them for getting reports. So yeah, it's a place that it costs down a few round trips, like some certain applications that would throw the overhead map and call viewport several times. They run, there was a significant performance increase that we switched to this.
Avoiding the round trips, so DRI2 is very context rich heavy relative to DRI1, which is one of the big criticisms, especially the Tungsten guys had.
Yeah.
So having it validated improves things a lot because when the client just sends requests to the server to say swap, it doesn't have to do get buffers every time, which is potentially expensive, especially on drivers that don't do a good job with get buffers, don't optimize get buffers. Although we still do have a round trip on the swap, so the client will do a swap buffers, it'll get back a reply to when the swap will occur, but we're not doing a new get buffers request, which is the expensive part. So yeah, it's a big performance win to have a validation instead.
the swap is actually synchronous?
It's a synchronous request because you need to make sure that the server receives the swap request before you proceed with rendering. If you send an asynchronous event and then continue rendering, you're just going to render into that same backlog that you were already rendering to. So you need to make sure you do the round trip. But the server doesn't do any processing. It's not like you trigger an expensive communication and the server then return.
It returns immediately.
Yeah, but you need that set point with the X server to make sure that the request to either split the buffer and copy back to front has been queued within the X server. And then once that's in place, you can proceed the render. And this one may happen later. And you can wait on that to the events mechanism or a call.
You could optimize that out of the client error if you wanted, because you could just do, I've sent a swap request. Don't know where my next rendering is going to go, but I know it'll happen sometime. And if you had, admittedly this requires something like an S area, but then as you're dropping VL down into the driver, you can just say, I'm just going to record this, I don't know where it's going yet. And eventually once you record, you find a bit in the S area that says, yep, I have plenty of buffers, this is where they are. And you can't really, you could also check like with peak event, so just look ahead at the request queue.
It doesn't have to be a hard round trip, you're right. You could send a one-way request, and then you could, once you start rendering, you can say, I need that event to be there before I the event could come in, like if you submit this work and go do something else, once you go back and once you start rendering, that event may have arrived, and then at that point, I don't need to make that event.
Yeah, I get the feeling that, given the compute the next scene and then start GL convention that we were talking about earlier, you don't actually need it. You'll never actually hit the bit or the part where you start queuing that request. So as long as your GL request looks ahead and says, oh, yeah, I've got my event.
Yeah.
I think you could make it a request in an event.
That's been something that I wanted to do as well, but it's never really...
I don't mean to take a whole lot of time. This,
but yeah, you do need a certain point, but it doesn't have to be a hard run to put into a request and an event.
All the architecture theory, you just emulate and invalidate. So yeah. You do the swap, you send an invalidate into the driver then picks up on, at least for gallium, on the first draw call you have to do, and then you go back into libgl and it will actually, you could wait or do anything, and then go back into the driver again and continue.
Yeah, I mean, you can do smart stuff too on the driver side, right? Where you can do fence objects within the driver or something like that to make sure that it works. So that's all.
Do you have cases where you have to force the exchange of buffers? For example, when some client gets a scan of buffers for itself and never calls that buffers? And another client.
Like an overlay or something? Maybe a client taking control of the scan out?
Yes. So ideally, for us, the mobile device, the topmost application wants to have a scan out buffer.
Right.
And
that's more unidirection, isn't it?
The back buffer has to be, if you want to do page flipping, the back buffer of the direct render time has to be as well allocated to the buffer that we can swap to that. We probably the back buffer of the direct buffer with the scan up buffer. And that there, we don't have to be asking if there's any way to control the access to swap out buffers.
For the exchange.
To force the exchange.
I think
it's the client who controls.
Well, the server.
He might still have pointers to the front buffer.
For the client should never be drawing straight to the front buffer, right? Especially if they're using GL, because then you'll get partial rendering on the screen. It'll be all ugly. You want a double buffer all the time, right? You just want to make sure that it always flips.
Sure, but the front and back might be both there on the front buffer, right?
The front and back will both be.
So are you thinking of a case where you have like partial redraws and you want to make sure that you swap front and back, so you can copy the redraw region back to the back buffer?
Or just
in one case where we have a frame buffer, which is a canonical buffer, then some client gets calls DRL to get buffers, gets buffer, and never releases it to anyone else. So
I see what you're saying. So like in the case of the SGX hardware, sometimes you'll allocate a frame buffer that's two front buffers big, and you'll swap between them.
Yeah.
And then if the client has a get buffer, so it has a separate buffer over here, you can't swap it. You can't flip it, right?
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that the client, when it requests...
have to be completely... conflicting clients wouldn't allow...
Yeah. We haven't had to deal with any fanciness like that, where you make sure that the next get buffer gets the back buffer that's allocated contiguously in the frame buffer memory.
But one of the things you can do in that case is that you can remap the back pages that back the buffer. So if a client is importing onto a back buffer that it's not using, so you could just unbind the buffer from those pages, and then you could bind those pages to a different buffer. So
basically, so you need to do it internal.
Yeah, that means the memory management support. You need to, like the TTF memory right there can has this concept of different memory domains. So if you want to move a buffer from media memory into host memory, for example, that's a similar operation. In this case, you just have contiguous memory and regular memory. And you're just saying you want to move this buffer from regular memory, from contiguous memory out into regular memory, so someone else can use that. So you could use an eviction scheme like that to keep out a client that's holding on to a scanner buffer.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in the protocol that precludes that. You just need some smarts in your DDX and kernel side of your memory management.
I think
a bunch of contiguous memory for your frame buffer, that just makes everything hard, right?
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
I mean, the other thing that helps a lot is having sub-buffer blitz support, right? So in that case, if you keep your front and back buffers consistent, even if you are blitting from a separate application, as long as you know that it started with this back buffer and it's changed, you know, a specific set of scissors or rects, you can just blit those over to the back buffer and then blit. But that's not ideal. That's not as good as just doing it in the back buffer to begin with. But there, you know, you have to do measurements on those applications and see. Because doing the small blitz can actually be better anyway.
You can always paste it. You can just paste the into small blitz back from the new function.
Yeah, you can do that too. Yeah.
So there's this.
Well, I was just thinking in some cases, doing a small set of racks and blitting that to the front, even if you blit it straight to the front from your separate application space, can be better than a page flip, depending on how your TLBs are working for your memory mapping. And your caches and things. So then you can keep your compressed, if you've got frame buffer compression or if you've got a display FIFO that's large, you get to keep all of those bits potentially.
Sounds like nobody else would be having this
stuff. Well, except for, we have people inside Intel that have that same problem.
Yes.
But we've told them, hey, you can solve that. We haven't done anything to stop you from solving it. But yeah, I agree, it's a hard thing to do well when you have that kind of limitation. So no more questions? That's all I have. I don't know how we're doing in time.
You are just about at the end of your hour.
Perfect.